Hey there, it's Jeff, and we have finally reached the biggest event of 2020 that was not canceled by COVID, Election Day. Eyes and ears from across the nation are on North Carolina. It's a presidential battleground, could be the tipping point for the U.S. Senate. So much to digest and read and watch and listen to. We do hope that you'll join us tonight for special coverage. Will Michaels and myself will have live coverage of election results. You can find them streaming at WNC.org. You can also find me on Twitter in the meantime, if you need to, J_TIBS. We are planning to drop a special episode of the WNC Politics Podcast, hot and ready, like a Krispy Kreme donut, in your feed tomorrow. Here's hoping I can grab a little bit of sleep between now and then. But first, right now, I owe you a podcast. It is a Tuesday. We are ready to deliver. Or I should say, my colleagues are ready to deliver. Today, I want to share an episode of the podcast Tested with you. Tested doesn't do breaking news. Instead, it puts what's happening in our state and our region in deep context so that we all have a better understanding of current events. Just like the Politics Podcast, it comes out every Tuesday and Friday. And I highly recommend you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Tested, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. You'll see why after you hear today's show. This episode of Tested explores virtual learning and COVID times for our youngest students and how children as young as preschool can experience racial bias even in a Zoom classroom. I'll let host Leonita Inge take it from here. That's Miss Inge to you.
Okay, class, settle down now. No snacking on Zoom. Clyde, please mute yourself while I'm talking. Cassie, turn your camera on so we can get started. Now, raise your hand if you've ever heard of the doll tests. Anybody? Okay, then. Let's get into it. The infamous doll tests were conducted in the 1940s by two pioneering African-American psychologists, Kenneth and Mamie Clark. They wanted to prove the negative psychological effects of segregation on Black children. Researchers would show the children a Black doll and a white doll, and in so many words, ask which one was better. The study has been recreated many times over the years with similar results.
Which doll is the pretty doll? Which doll is the nice doll? Which doll is the bad doll?
The Clark's findings in the 1940s had a huge effect. In 1954, the NAACP used the research as part of their case in Brown v. Board of Education when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled racial segregation of children in public schools was unconstitutional. But integrated schools have not done away with our implicit biases.
And why is that doll pretty?
Because she's white and he has two eyes.
Which doll is the ugly doll? Why is that doll ugly?
Because he's black.
The results of the doll test is evidence that even the youngest of children carry implicit bias. Attitudes are stereotypes we're socialized to believe. And if it exists in our littlest ones, you know it's in adults too. Our biases show up everywhere, in the workplace, in the doctor's office, and in the classroom.
Now we're going to look at our letters.
I can tell you firsthand that being a Black parent means you have to be involved in your child's education, not just helping out with homework, but letting teachers and administrators know your kid has a vocal advocate for their fair treatment. And that hasn't changed now that most learning in our state is happening on Zoom.
So it says their eyes are watching.
Excuse me.
Listening.
Our executive producer, Lindsay Foster Thomas, is a Black mom to a Black 4-year-old in Durham. She's told us discrimination is still a concern, even in the virtual version of pre-K. Kids are taught to raise their hands if they want to be called on. But some days, her daughter's hand gets overlooked again and again by the white lead teacher. And she has to ask why.
Okay, she's been raising her hand.
Yeah, I was just trying to give everyone a turn, and she was raising it when I was talking, so I was like trying to get through.
We're talking about the potential to do real harm, not because we have the bias, but because we have the bias and we don't know it.
A few years ago, Yale researcher Walter Gilliam conducted a study on implicit bias among preschool teachers. His team asked educators to watch videos of four children in a classroom setting. One black boy, one white boy, one black girl, one white girl. Here he is talking with Kentucky Educational Television in 2017.
And we say, now you're going to watch some videos, and some of the times children engage in challenging behaviors, but some of the times we can see those behaviors before they become too problematic. Your job is to watch these children and hit this button anytime you see something that could turn into a challenging behavior.
Meanwhile, Gilliam's team used a tool to see who the participants were keeping an eye on the most.
So basically, we were priming. We were cueing these teachers to expect that a child is going to misbehave, and your job is to find that child who's going to misbehave.
So, want to take a guess at who they said was misbehaving the most? The two black students, particularly the black boy. But here's the kicker.
But what we didn't tell the teachers is this. No child misbehaves in any of the videos because all the children are child actors that we have hired who are sitting around a table in an empty classroom. What we were really looking at was not how quickly can you find challenging behaviors. What we were really looking for was this. When we lead you to believe that a child's going to misbehave, who do you decide to look at? You're a preschool teacher, and I've led you to believe that a child's going to misbehave. Who do you think it's going to be?
Bias is almost a form of racism, but just in sort of in this smaller version of a classroom or a program.
That's Ioma Iruka. She's a professor in public policy and the director of the Early Childhood Health and Racial Equity Program at UNC Chapel Hill. She says bias in the classroom can cause some serious consequences for kids' well-being, especially when young students are disciplined. Data from the Department of Education shows that black public preschoolers are 3.6 times more likely to be suspended compared to their white classmates. Preschoolers being suspended. Iruka says a way to mend these disciplinary disparities is creating an anti-bias classroom.
An anti-bias classroom, you know, is one where, you know, children are not viewed by their sort of identities only, right? Like, you know, you're a black boy, so that means that I have these inherent sort of expectations of you, usually negative. And so I'm going to create an environment that's low expectations. Or you're Latino, so you must not know any English. And so I should not speak to you in English or, you know, so there's certain identities that in some ways, it's just the way our brain functions, right? Bias is really a brain functioning sort of thing where it's unconditional and we do it whether we want to or not. And so it actually means that you have to be intentional about seeing each individual child in a very clear way about who are you, what are your skill sets, and how could I help you reach your best self, right? And not the one I think you are. So that means that we have to have expectations that says, here's what I expect of you, not because of what society says you are, but because of what you are and what I expect of you. So I would say an anti-bias classroom is where it's about sort of saying, you know what, no matter what society says about you, in this classroom, I expect the best of you, and I will provide the opportunity for you to show your best.
So how do we do this, you know, have an anti-bias virtual classroom? We're in the middle of a pandemic, you know, so everybody's having to do things differently. You know, how does a teacher, you know, get through to their students that way in the setting that we live in today?
Yeah. I mean, because clearly I have a 3 and 7 year old. So trust me, when I work full time still, and I have like 50 jobs. So I really completely respect and value our teachers, our educators who are doing so much. I would say that part, like to me, in many ways, we're actually seeing you know, some of the continuation of what was happening in person, virtual. We're seeing sort of this hyper vigilance with certain groups of children. We've heard of stories of people calling the cops because of a BB gun or something that they saw or thought or heard. We're seeing children being publicly sort of disciplined, like, hey, Jamie, sit down, right? Like, we're still seeing some of those acts of microaggressions and biases still coming up, because not like the children, teachers change so much, is that the media from which they function in has changed. And so if a teacher is highly stressed, and that's the thing we know about science, when somebody's highly stressed, they're likely to go with their bias and not so much about what they should do. And so a lot of that is already coming forth. So what I would say we have to probably do is to remind ourselves is that we probably need to support teachers even much more than before. And also don't forget that children are dealing with their own stressors, right? Like, how many kids were working virtually online, having to sit still in front of a camera, right? That in itself is could be toxic, right? Could be stressful. And so I think we have to, in some ways, begin to sort of acknowledge that we've never been in this situation. And so everybody is dealing with a level of stress. So I think adults have to be adults and not try to sort of put their adult challenges on children who are still children, who still are going through a level of brain development, self-regulation. And so many ways to me, to do anti-bias virtual classroom is to ensure that teachers are at least aware of their stress level. They're also aware of whether they're being much more hypervigilant with certain groups of children. They have to also understand, what are your children experiencing? Have you had separate conversations with each of your children and their families, right? Have you had that family conference? So how do we continue to create that learning environment in a way that takes into account all the differences that children are experiencing and families are experiencing? And that can only be done by conversations and communication and relationship building.
I like the way you use the term opportunity gap instead of achievement gap, because achievement gap means what it's the children's fault, you know, that they're not doing what they're supposed to do. But when we think about even the opportunity gap, do you think the situation is worsening during this pandemic and virtual teaching, or, you know, maybe the gap is decreasing because maybe a lot of parents now have to really pay very close attention to the work their children are doing?
I think there's not even it's not like one or the other. I think, so I was, let me start with the sort of like, I remember when it started and I started hearing all the people like, oh my God, the achievement gap is going to get worse. Oh my goodness, panic, panic, panic. And I was thinking in my head like, well, that could be true. But if we actually look at it from another side of it, is that children probably won't be suspended. Because if you were suspended, you're not learning anyways. Children won't be, you know, abused in terms of emotion. They won't face microaggressions. And I'm thinking about Black children in particular. So, and that while they're home, there's probably more connection. We heard that more fathers were spending more time with their children. So there's relationships they're able to develop that wasn't there before. Like, I think about myself, I was traveling a lot, but I was able to now really have a much deeper relationship with my child and my children. So I think there's some benefits that we should take account of, because we know that relationships between parents and children actually matter, and matters even much more so than schools. But of course, there's the other side where we know that there are children who are struggling, who are not getting the most enriching experiences, who are struggling with relationships because their families are highly stressed out of the home, can't work from home. So we do have those side of the coins. But I think what COVID-19 has shown us, and I tell this to people all the time, COVID-19 just is another set of glasses that we should wear forever to show us that racism and racial disparities have always been here. They were always in front of us, and it allows us to actually not hide from it. And so many ways, I take this, that's an opportunity for us as adults, for those of us in many different systems, to say, you know what, this has always been here. How could we actually take this challenge head on and ensure that we are not here in 2022, still talking about the same racial disparities, the same economic disparities, and we need to deal with them at many, many levels.
So do you have any examples of some situations, personal or not, that you know of and that definitely you included in your research?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the, I think, big example that I have witnessed it, and I, you know, and I have young kids. And so, you know, so one of it is, I won't say the name of the program, but I think they'll be treated as one of the most highly touted, high quality programs in the country. And this was actually, we were actually watching it through a monitor. So we were actually sitting outside the room and we can actually watch it. Like most, a lot of our large programs have ways you can actually watch the classroom. And I remember this one is always going to be in my mind for probably as long as I live. And I remember one where there was sort of a group of like, who looked non-white, let's just say non-white boys, but they looked phenotypically Black. And I remember the boys were building this sort of like really complex train sort of tracks and things with blocks. And what I remember clearly was a teacher just walking over. Like they looked up thinking the teacher was going to come and commend them or talk to them about their whole complex structure they spent literally clearly all morning, or at least during that time, building. The child looked up and then the teacher walked over this, like literally walked over like it didn't exist to go get another child to just talk with. And that may not seem as biased, but we witness those kind of things happening where the only time that boy actually got attention was say, go sit down, go do something. It was this sort of harshness in the voice of this teacher. Mind you, this boy has been sitting there really working hard. And I think looking for that affirmation that, oh my God, let's talk about your work. And think about what it does to the soul of a child when somebody who they think is sort of like, oh my God, this is my teacher. She's there for me. And when they feel like this teacher doesn't care for me, doesn't even want to talk to me and only wants to treat me in sort of this unfair, publicly shame and way. So to me, a lot of times it's all these things that are happening in the classroom that I think destroys the spirit and the soul of a child. I think it's the one thing we should really, really think about.
This makes me sort of think of some research that I definitely heard about a long time ago. Public school teachers show favoritism to students that look like them. And what we know now about many, many, many public schools across the country is that most of the children are children of color and most of the teachers are not. So to me, that's problematic.
Yeah, this is one, we can't change the workforce, right? It's 80% mostly white females compared to the majority minority students that we have. But I do think there are things that we can do. And I should first remind us too that, there's not all teachers of color are also great for children of color, right? Like I think at the end of it, we need great teachers writ large. But nevertheless, though, I think having a teacher who looks like you, takes a little bit of the pressure off of the child when they know, okay, this classroom and environment fits with the way I talk, the way I think, my family and my parents maybe can connect with them better. There is a little bit more opportunity for strengthen the classroom environment because of that alignment with race, between the race of the teacher and the child. But I think what we have to do is in many ways that we have to ensure that our higher ed programs are really ensuring that they are training teachers for the real world, right? Not training teachers for the children that they think that they want, but the children that they have. So that means that a lot of our higher ed needs to be much more sophisticated around anti-racist, anti-bias teaching. They have to be really attuned into what is culturally responsive practices. They have to really be thinking about teaching as a social justice kind of approach, not just I'm a good teacher, so every child will learn under me, but that it's actually an act of social justice that you're teaching. And for children of color, they have a different kind of life that needs to be part of the teaching instruction and teaching environment and curricula. And so we need to do a much better job of articulating that. I think what we've been doing a lot of times is sort of say, you're a good teacher, colorblind teaching, like that has helped us. No. So I do think we need to be much more forceful and much more intentional to speak to this issue of we have a mismatch and we need to do better at that particular thing.
Ioma Iruka is the director of the Early Childhood Health and Racial Equity Program at UNC Chapel Hill. She's also the co-author of the book, Don't Look Away, Embracing Anti-Bias Classrooms.
New episodes of Tested are available every Tuesday and Friday. And speaking of new episodes, remember that another WUNC Politics podcast drops for you sometime. Late tonight, early tomorrow, results, analysis, and who knows, a surprise, of course, seems possible. It is 2020 after all, right? Thanks for listening. I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you again soon.